Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Hi, friends. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for your practice. Ran out of air. Imagine that. Chapter 20. Bodhisattva Never Disparaging. Or as it's translated here, Bodhisattva Sadaparibhuta. Never disparaging. So again, this is a short chapter, but it's really about perseverance, right? But perseverance in that we need to minimize, if not ultimately, our goal. This has more to do with the Noble Eightfold Path, actually, if you think about it. We need to remind ourselves every day as we meet other people that they all have the same Buddha nature we have. They may not know it. They may be behaving as far away from it as one might imagine. But our attitude, our intent is what we're working on. That is the most important thing in our social contacts. Not just with other Buddhists. In fact, it's even more important to be mindful amongst other Buddhists. And Shakyamuni is going to talk about that. But in general, the respect, the dignity we need to offer. Now, that doesn't mean if somebody's being really ugly, whether it's directed to you or others, that you don't need to, be careful. Some people, worlds of animality, hunger, hell, those people are desperate. There's nothing more dangerous in so many ways than a desperate person. But still, knowing that they have the Buddha nature, we need to raise compassion in our head and our mind and heart, yes, for those people. Because you're witnessing suffering, plain and simple. Now, that doesn't mean you float in like some golden cherub of protection. You need to be smart about this, right? You need to avoid. I mean, we've read plenty of Nichiren and Shakyamuni about avoiding people that are, potentially violent or just even bad influences. But that's on us, isn't it? And we're constantly reminded of that, that it's the way we perceive other. Do we want friendship? Do we want to be amongst that group? Do we want to feel like we're amongst the group? As soon as you think that, or you think that, you should be asking yourself constantly, what am I willing to give up to do this? What am I willing to accept or ignore, even worse, just to say, just to feel as though I'm part of this group? What's the payoff? What are you getting? Always, it comes back to dignity. If you truly understand that you're, and I'm, I just said everyone has the Buddha nature. Well, so do you. And knowing that you have the Buddha nature, you should value your potential. Right? To be amongst people who are, whether they're Buddhist or not, potentially bad influences, that's their life they're experiencing. The way you are concomitant in their lives, the way you are compromising your dignity to be there, you're no longer a bodhisattva. You've fallen off of that, and you're being dragged along something samsaric. you really need to observe your behavior, your situation in life, and understand that as you participate with others, again, whether they're ignorant or Buddhist practitioners or other sects of Buddhism, it's your behavior, your dignity in that situation that you need to uphold. Don't wait for them to do it. That is how you're a bodhisattva, an exemplar, right? It's a tough measurement to stay constantly aware of. But it is vital for our path to enlightenment. Again, it comes down to our own attitude and intent, our minds. Buddhism, Buddhahood, enlightenment, dignity, all these things don't come from anywhere else. They come, to borrow from Nietzsche, from within our own flesh and blood body. In other words, this apparatus which opportunes us of sentience, a sentient mind. That's the location of our experience of life, our dignity, our enlightenment, everything. So bodhisattva never disparaging is about you can commit all your energy to study, to preserving and reciting the Lotus Sutra. But if your habit is, oh, that guy's an idiot or she doesn't know what she's talking about. Now, that may be true. But if you leave it at that, then the intent and the attitude is to smear the other person. And it's okay to criticize if it's constructive. You ever heard of that? Constructive criticism? Very different from just criticism. See, just because somebody is wrong, Nietzsche did this all the time. He pointed out the flaws in these great teachers, teachers that were very influential, tight with the government, had a lot of political power. It's pretty bold to challenge those people. But he didn't challenge them just to say, that guy's an idiot, and he's a jerk, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It may have sounded like that to them, but his goal was always correction, helping, leading to amelioration, helping these people to see the error of their ways. This is always a difficult, right? A difficult path, a difficult road to hoe, if you will, right? Farmer speak. And it's not for everyone. Nietzsche talked about Shakyamuni versus Shoju. And Shakyamuni and Nietzsche both remind us that largely due to that, we need to take responsibility for who we introduce, because that commitment to correct or just to lead somebody toward their enlightenment, that path as we are following, is a great, great, profound commitment. Don't just be flippant about it. Don't be, you know, oh, you should practice Buddhism. You don't know what you're doing. No, that's not a dignity promoting communication, right? So let's get into it. That's generally what this chapter is about. And let's see how Shakyamuni speaks about it. Bodhisattva never disparaging. Thereupon the Buddha addressed Bodhisattva Mahasattva Mahasamaprata. You should know that, as I've previously explained, yes, thank you, those who revile, disparage, or slander monks, nuns, lay people, lay women, lay men, who preserve the Myoho Rengekyo, the Lotus Sutra, will sow a bitter harvest. Right? So those who, you heard it, you put down or you insult, right? Those who are practicing this Buddhism, as Shakyamuni laid out, they're sowing the seeds of an unhappy life, right? It's going to come back. They're going to experience, not retribution, but the repercussions of creating that environment, right? As I've just taught, the merit attained by preserving the Lotus Sutra will result in the pure faculties of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, right? We just had a whole chapter about that. O Mahastha Maprata, in the past, immeasurable, limitless, inconceivable, and incalculable kalpas ago, long time ago, there was a Buddha called, here's another one, Bhishmagarjisvaraja, a Tathagata, a completely enlightened, perfect in knowledge and conduct, well departed, knower of the world, unsurpassed, tamer of humans, teacher of devas and humans, a Buddha. His land was called Mahasambhava, and the kalpa was named Vinirboga. The Buddha, Bhishmagarjisvararaja, expounded the Dharma for devas, humans, and asuras in this world, as would be. To those who sought the Shravaka vehicle, he expounded the Dharma in accordance with the Four Noble Truths, right? The first vehicle, right, of the three major vehicles. Ferried them from birth, old age, illness, and death, and ultimately led them to nirvana. Usually the path to becoming an arhat, yeah? To those who sought the Pratyeka Buddha vehicle, he expounded the Dharma in accordance with the 12-length chain of dependent origination, the Nidana, right? To the Bodhisattvas, he expounded the Dharma in accordance with the six perfections with reference to highest complete enlightenment and led them to the Buddha's wisdom, which is what ultimately we all want to be doing, and that's why you and I, Bodhisattvas of the Earth, are on this Lotus Sutra path, right? O Mahasat Matprata, the lifespan of the Buddha Bhishmagarjisvararaja was as kalpas equal to 40 myriads of kotas, of nayutas, of sands of the Ganges River. There's our Ganges River again. The true Dharma abided for kalpas equal to the number of particles in Jambudvipa, the entire world. The semblance Dharma abided for kalpas equal to the number of particles for the four continents. And having benefited the sentient beings, the Buddha entered Parinirvana, just as he himself is doing, right? After the extinction of the true and semblance dharmas, he appeared in this land, or there appeared in this land, another Buddha who was also called Bhishmagarjisvararaja, a Tathagata, completely enlightened, perfect in knowledge and conduct, well departed, knower of the world, unsurpassed, tamer of humans, teacher of the devas and humans, a Buddha. In this way, there appeared two myriads of kotas of Buddhas, one after another, all of whom have the same name. Right? This is this mental invention of a persistent Buddha-ness. But he's using personages to do it. He's storytelling. After the Parinirvana of the first Tathagata, Bhishmagarjisvararaja, there were excessively proud and overbearing monks in the age of the semblance dharma. Who do you think he's talking about there? He's made this same description over and over again of arhats, right? Not all arhats, but many arhats like the ones who left in the early chapters of this assembly, yeah? Thought they knew what they didn't. After the true Dharma had been extinguished, at that time, there was also a monk, a bodhisattva, called Never Despising or Never Disparaging. Pick your adjective. O Mahasamaprata, Prapta. Why was he called Never Despising, Never Disparaging? Because whenever he saw a monk, nun, laywoman, or layman, he would praise and pay homage to them, saying, I deeply respect you. I dare not belittle you. Why is this? Because all of you practice the bodhisattva path and will become Buddhas. As I said earlier, this is a very interesting mindset to keep reminding yourself. Forget if that swells another practitioner's head, right? We're talking specifically about Buddhist practitioners here. Forget if it flatters their ego. It's not about them. See, this is real mindfulness, is understanding that the entire world and the way we interact with it is with our presence of mind, if you will. So what comes out of our mouth absolutely has to reflect that dignity, that presence of mind. This is what we need to understand about other people, that they may say a lot of stuff coming out of their minds, but it doesn't, it's like it just should go right past us. It shouldn't affect you, influence you. That requires quite a self-security, doesn't it? To understand that whatever comes out of other people's mouths is them expressing their state of mind. Yeah. But our samsaric mind gets attached so quickly. Right? Everything that comes out of other people's mouths to us seems like a personal judgment. But that's a choice that you make to take that on. It's like I've talked many times. It's been a long time since I've talked about it, but the statement, take offense. I hope you don't take offense, right? She offended me. Really? How'd she do that? Well, she called me a this or that, so that's her problem. Why are you taking the offense? Stop taking it. No, that doesn't mean argue back. It means laugh at it. It makes me sad that you feel that way. We really should work on changing that. What's going on with you? You'll confuse people if you do that, because they want to give you offense. But just because they're offering doesn't mean you have to take it. Right? I'm not talking about harm, personal injury. Right? I'm talking about offense. Wow, you look like you've gained 50 pounds. Perhaps I have. Hopefully they're all good pounds. So, what's happening with you today? You decide, right? Because it's your experience of life. Let yours stay in the bodhisattva realm. Don't be dragged down all of a sudden. For what? Right? So, the flip side of that is, gosh, I'm going to remind myself that I deeply respect everyone I meet. And what if you said that instead of taking offense? Hey, you fat slob, looks like you ate an entire pig this morning. Well, I deeply respect you. What? I dare not belittle you. Why is this? Because all of you practice the bodhisattva path and will become Buddhas. Now, you know, if the person is truly in a desperate mindset. They may challenge you on that. They may ridicule you, whatever. But stay the course. Because that makes you an exemplar. Shows the others who may be in earshot that you have no need to take that offense, that you rise above. That may anger the person who's trying to insult you, but remember, we're talking about fellow Buddhists here, yeah? Practicing the Bodhisattva path. And if that's not the case, then walk away. You don't need to engage with somebody who's obviously struggling. It's not about you. It's about your influence. And sometimes your influence will burst those karmic bubbles in total strangers. I've had it happen to me in a drugstore, but like a general store. It's a total stranger come up to me in the hall as a result of a pamphlet or something. And I was talking to a friend of mine while I was shopping, and we must have been talking about Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. This guy met me several times going the other direction in every aisle I went down to argue with me. And then I would say something, frustrate him, smile. He didn't got befuddled and bewildered and frustrated, and he took off. And couple of aisles later, and another thing. Whoa, what's going on with you? Listen, we should talk about this. Why don't you come over and chant with me? You know, frustrated. What's that going to do? You know, he was really adamant about knocking me down, but he just couldn't. I was of a very high spirits that day. Had, you know, chanted a lot. Just anyway. He just couldn't bring me down. And I kept inviting him. And I saw him start to wonder, maybe he should check it out, right? Maybe I should do this. But he still, and he just ripped up whatever he was reading and threw it in the trash, made sure that I was in eye shot when he did it, and stomped away and left. But I thought, at very least, I gave him a positive influence, something. Who knows? He may be a leader at this point. I have no idea. All I know is his life condition. If it affected my life condition at all, it raised it. That's the amazing thing. When you stay the course, your life condition, your Buddha's wisdom increases. That was a very fascinating experience for my study and history with this Buddhism. Anyway. Furthermore, this monk did not concentrate himself on reciting the sutras, but only paid homage such that even when he saw the fourfold assembly from afar, he would go up to them, praise, and pay homage to them, saying, I dare not belittle you, because you will all become Buddhas. So however that's translated, the point is, everyone has the Buddha nature. And so when I meet anyone, what I meet in my mind is a potential Buddha. With that in mind, how would I behave? Right? That's the central point. In the fourfold assembly, there were some whose minds were impure and who became angry and reviled and disparaged him, saying, where does this ignorant monk come from? He says that he himself will not belittle us and predicts that we all shall become Buddhas. We don't need such an idle prediction. Who is he to tell us? Right? In this way, he wandered about for many years and was always reviled, but he never got angry and always said, you will become a Buddha. Whenever he spoke these words, people would assail him with sticks and stones. Can you imagine? He fled from them, yet still proclaimed loudly at a distance, I dare not belittle you. You will all become Buddhas. Since he always spoke these words, the excessively proud monks, nuns, lay women, lay men, called him never disparaging or never despising. When this monk was about to die, he heard in the air 20,000 of myriads of codas of verses of the Lotus Sutra, expounded previously by the Buddha Bhishmarajitsa Vararaja, and completely preserving them, he attained the purity of the eye, the purity of the ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind that were described before. After having attained these pure faculties, his lifespan increased to hundreds of myriads of kodas of nayutas of years, and he taught the Lotus Sutra to the people far and wide. Then, those excessively proud monks, nuns, laymen, laywomen, in the fourfold assembly, who had despised him and called him never despising, saw that he had attained great transcendent powers. The powers of joy in eloquence, and the power of great virtuous meditation. Hearing his teachings, all of them believed and followed him. They saw him as an exemplar. Furthermore, this bodhisattva inspired 1,000 myriads of kodas of sentient beings and caused them to abide in highest complete enlightenment. After his death, he met 2,000 kodas of Buddhas, all of whom were called Khandrasuriya Pradipa. In accordance with his teaching, he expounded this Lotus Sutra and for this reason met another 2,000 kodas of Buddhas, all of whom were called Megashvararaja. He preserved and recited this sutra in accordance with the teachings of these Buddhas and expounded it for the sake of the fourfold assembly. Thus, he attained purity of the natural eye, the purity of the ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, and taught the Dharma to the fourfold assembly without fear. Now, don't get caught up in the before and after and how many lifetimes and all of that. You know, in Buddhism, Shakyamuni plays with the idea of time constantly. And this was a device that the people of his day, because they were such magical, mystical thinkers, this made sense to them. This is all about influence and remaining influence, right? Anyway, that's all I need to say about that. If you have questions about that, I talk about it quite often, so hopefully you're getting it. But if you have questions about that, don't be shy about asking, right? Comments or emails. O Mahasamaprata. Mahasamaprata. This Bodhisattva Mahasattva, never despising, respected, honored, praised, and paid homage to all these Buddhas. Of course, that was his dignity, was as an exemplar of what? Buddhas. Having planted roots of good merit, he again met thousands of myriads of kodas of Buddhas, and he expounded the sutra over and over again in accordance with the teaching of those Buddhas. Having perfected his merits, he attained Buddhahood. So this harkens back to the question, what do you mean they get all these purities, but even though they haven't attained the divine eye or whatever, this is the process of enlightenment is what he's eliciting, right? Sorry about that. Slurp. O Mahasathamaprata, what do you think about this? Was Bodhisattva, never despising, of that time someone unknown to you? Was Bodhisattva, never despising, of that time someone unknown to you? He was none other than I myself. Oh. If I had not preserved and recited this sutra and taught it to others in my previous or my past, I would not have swiftly attained highest complete enlightenment. Because I preserved and recited this sutra and taught it to others in the presence of previous Buddhas, I swiftly attained highest complete enlightenment. So, on the one hand, he spent 12 years in an arduous task of discovering Buddha. And from that moment on, spread the teachings. But also, and this harkens back to the lifespan of the Tathagata chapter, I didn't invent Buddha or enlightenment. It's always been there in everyone and everywhere and everything. What I managed to awaken or discover is that that potential is everywhere all the time, with time without beginning, within our flesh and body, flesh and blood body. I don't know why I have a hard time saying that. Exists the support endemically, if that's the right word to use, inherently, for us to perceive, to witness, to experience Dharma, this wondrous, complete expression of our potential, the potential. O Mahasthamaprata, then the fourfold assembly of monks, nuns, lay women, and laymen, who became angry and disparaged me, because we know, even Devadatta, right, threw rocks at him and other things, did not, as a consequence, meet a Buddha for 200 kodas of kalpas, nor did they hear the Dharma or see the Sangha. They suffered greatly in the Avicii hell for 1,000 kalpas. What's the Avicii hell? Just did a video on that from the new volume 2 of Buddhism Reference. It's the first noble truth. Life is suffering. After having been freed from the consequences of this their errors and finally met Bodhisattva, never disparaging, see the influence here, who led and inspired them to highest complete enlightenment. How did he lead them? Well, first of all, by not taking offense. Mahasthamaprata, what do you think about this? Were those in the fourfold assembly of that time who had disparaged the Bodhisattva persons unknown to you? They are the 500 bodhisattvas in this assembly, beginning with Bhadrapala, the 500 nuns beginning with Simhadkandra, and the 500 laymen beginning with Sugatasetana, all of whom will never turn back on the path to highest complete enlightenment. O Mahasthamaprata, know that this Lotus Sutra will greatly benefit the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas and lead them to highest complete enlightenment. For this reason, after the Tathagata's Parinirvana, the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas should always preserve, recite, explain, and copy this sutra. Thereupon, the Buddha, wanting to elaborate the meaning of this, further spoke in these verses. Where are we time-wise? And we'll keep the verses for the next video. I'm trying to keep these at a reasonable length. Comment, if you will. I've had comments before on wanting longer videos, wanting shorter videos. I'm just trying to be reasonable and create a useful resource, right? Anyway, I think you're getting the message here. It's pretty clear. Attitude and intent. And it's really quite a difficult thing to monitor. especially when we're in the throes of samsara, right? So, I mean, the thing to do to keep our awareness high is just chant more sincerely, if more, because there's always room to really commit, right? Like in the videos I did on savor your practice, you know, slow down, really consider every character. I just did a Q&A video where I created a cheat sheet of sorts to help for those of you who struggle with how do I chant to meet Buddha? How do I do that? I always have the monkey mind is always going, telling me, look at this. What about rent? What about da 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 da? I mean, the whole point of Nichiren's mandala is to help us shut those monkeys down, to give us something to focus on. But if you need an additional transition to help you with words, I gave you, for the seven characters, I gave you a thought for each. And maybe that's the way when you first look at your presence at the Butsudan, remember? When you first sit at your altar and you look at Myoho on your scroll, your mandala, and look at each character, right? Just, I got to remember, what does each of these characters represent? It represents the way I'm thinking. The way I'm thinking is to do this moment to moment, to raise, to meet, to awaken Buddha. And now, okay, I'm getting it. I understand it. Now I can just do it. I don't have to recite all of that for every character. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, I know what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. Let's make this happen now. Did I just lose some frames? No, that was a weird flash. Anyway, that's the way. That's the way to increase your dignity, your attitude, your intent, and maintain the strength, the idea, the presence of that as you course through your day. Fellow bodhisattvas, thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting this effort, this resource, yes? It's for all of us to increase our confidence, right? To get rid of doubt, to really, really feel resolved to maintain this quality of experience of life, the engine of life. So, you know, liking and subscribing, very simple thing to do. It's a bodhisattva act because it helps grow the resource. Boy, this is getting brighter. And so on and so forth. You've heard me say that. All the links in the descriptions, avail yourself to those. Any way you can support this effort. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you. Thank you for being a bodhisattva. Thank you for your practice. And in that, don't forget, take care of your health. Do the kindnesses for yourself. It will become easier to do during your day. Start with yourself. If yourself isn't right, how can you project positive Buddha path, Buddha-ness? Yeah. So take care of yourself. I will see you in the next one. Bye for now.